everbeyond.info. Be prepared, leave your belief systems behind, as we are beyond beaches, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Good afternoon, good evening. This is JP. This is Ever Beyond on Beyond Radio, on All Spirit Radio, on No Borders Radio. On Scottish Sovereigns on the Land, .ning.com, on Tyrannosaur, on All Spirit Radio, and whoever might be rebroadcasting this. Tonight, I hope to have my guest, Evie Morgan. She's probably got the old time zone issues, although I did say it was exactly 6 o'clock tonight. But hopefully she's okay, and she'll be back. If not now, in the next hour, I hope. But until time, there's plenty to talk about. I hope you're all well. There you are. She's just coming. Okay, ref. Cool. So, that's great. So, Evie's just arrived there. We're just maybe a tiny bit early for. So, very well, so there's been a few things, Spock died, and Ringo's admitted that the fall is a fake. So, well, I might be premature in that, but. I'm going to bring in Evie just now. Evie, good afternoon.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, good. Okay. Just got on?
Yes. Yeah, we're actually live on air because it's the show time is like 2 minutes ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
So we're actually starting. We start at 58, but people hear it at 00, so, at the top of the hour. Anyway, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. A great day. It was warmed up here, and it's good that it was above freezing, so...
Oh, that's nice. That makes a change. Are you snowed under in, 19 inches of snow?
Not that much. We were snowed in earlier in the week, and it did get quite cold, but it fluctuates a lot. I'm in the mountains of western North Carolina in the U.S., so we get a lot of, fluctuating extreme cold and then warm and extreme cold again, and so, yeah.
So, yeah, you have weather. We have lots of weather. I'm in the north of Scotland here, and I'm always complaining about the weather, or not necessarily complaining about, just like remarking on. Well, that wind was like 80 mile an hour, 20 minute kind of thing. Remarkable weather. So let's not talk about weather too long because we need to talk about anomalous material. it's a very interesting thing. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I was talking about like my past, and when I was young, I was a computer programmer. Before I was a computer programmer, I was just like a receptionist. I was just accept programs, punch cards. This is that long ago. But people started asking me, "Hey, what's wrong with my program?" And they showed me the paper, and I have no idea what language they were using. But somehow I would say, "What's that?" Because my eye would be drawn to something, and I was thinking that my eye is naturally drawn to anomaly.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I imagine that there are people that are not unlike me who draw themselves to anomaly for some reason, whatever it might be. Apparently, my ex-wife calls it its form of dyslexia, this thing. opposite dyslexia, yeah.
But I see it as being able to observe patterns that others do not see or see the connections between.
So, what'd be a good place to start? We had you on Eva Moore show the other week, which is where I like, oh wow, I got to speak to this woman, she's amazing. Water is flushed under the bridge. I understand that you came up with a phrase that had been banding around the truth sphere for the last years. Is the face phrase the alien love bite? That's what you came up with, isn't it?
Well, it's actually the name of my first book. The first book's actually called The Love Bite, but really is based on what we actually named the alien love bite, which was really a term that was probably phrased by someone actually in the Bay Area, California, who had alien abductions, where if aliens set them together in love relationships, where they orchestrated relationships, it had a certain pattern of obsession and a very, very powerful connection, which had a lot of anomalies, basically, to that relationship. So they called it the alien love bite.
Right.
But I just call it the love bite in my book, because really, sometimes it's more than just aliens involved, and that kind of gets into my second book called The Dark Side of Cupid, which was published in 2012. So there's actually a spot to this, actually.
And that's where you got that little, you got on your website, you have a Cupid who's actually like a gray, you know, with bow. You're like, oh, yes, this is now, this is, because this is, you know, how we've been messed with. And how we realize that we've been messed with, and how eventually we realize that life is not what we think it is. You know, life on planet Earth is not about 9 to 5, getting a job, having a marriage, and have children, and that's it. There's a lot more subtlety to it. Evie, take it away. You know what you want to say, because there's so much to say.
Yeah, there's so much to something like it. Tongue-tied, and other times I could just go on for hours. But when you mentioned the Cupid, I had to laugh, because it kind of reminds me of, these are the forms that these ancient gods are taking, but it's the same game over many, thousands and thousands of years with humanity. And I think they're playing us like a game, and basically farming us for some kind of resource, which I believe it ultimately goes back to life force and emotional energy and sexual energy. And this is really something that I brought to light. I really highlighted all that phenomena in The Dark Side of Cupid, to really focus on how this dynamic manifests in relationships, and really how to tell if that's happening, and how to tell, let's say, if this is a normal relationship thing, or maybe if it's just a little bit of emotional vampirism, and let's say full-blown psychic vampirism, where there's another type of entity involved that could be, let's say, what we thought in the beginning were, of course, aliens or some kind of ET, such as the Greys or the Pillions or Mantis beings, or maybe some kind of military or Nordic or another type of higher hierarchy being, which was also seen in some of Barbara Bartholik's cases, and those that Dr. Carla Turner described in her early books, actually before she died. And so really it was Barbara Bartholik's work that inspired me, and she mentored me for many years, actually, after Carla Turner died, because I was doing support group at the time in the mid-90s with people who've had mostly alien abductions, but also surrounding, I'd say, types of experiences which would be paranormal in nature, or some kind of unusual trauma, like a near-death experience, or spiritual warfare, or what I call the MILAB experience, and the MK Ultra ritual abuse, narcissistic abuse, and the positive encounters, all kinds of things. So I learned from Barbara Bartholik really to watch these syndromes as they unfold in these people's lives, because really a time, let's say in the mid-90s, when the alien abduction research was really kind of taking off after Bud Hopkins wrote his book Taken, and of course Whitley Strieber in his book Communion, and John Mack's book, and David Jacobs, y'all pretty much had a definition of alien abduction. They tried to keep it in, these circumscribed patterns that had more evidence to it that would give it some kind of credibility to believe if somebody who didn't know what they were seeing would be able to recognize it as kind of defined pattern that had definitely a physical component and some form of physical evidence, which it does happen. There's definitely craft seen and people taken physically, and where there's, physical marks, sometimes on the ground, on their bodies, where they're definitely encountering in the physical form these beings who appear to be physical in experience. So I'm not pooing that, because it does happen on a physical level. But it also happens on what I call it interdimensional or hyperdimensional level. Sometimes people are taken out of their bodies, or their consciousness is affected somehow. They're taken in and out of time. So let's say if they have a sighting of a craft, maybe they just see a light in the sky, and that's all they thought they saw was just a light that blinked in the sky, or maybe in their bedroom at night. And then maybe later they may have dreams of a full-blown encounter, but they can't figure out how they had it, because there was no missing time, because they have the ability to move in and out of time. So basically they could take you, use you for a number of hours or days or longer, and then pluck you back within moments of when they took you. So people have a lot of unusual memories that may not really have physical evidence, and it's very traumatizing, because they know it's real, but they can't prove it's real, but they know something happened, and they still have post-traumatic stress. So anyway, you know, they do more than just physical medical exams, which is really what's known more in the literature. And sometimes they do emotional testing and training, was what we saw in our early work. And in the MILABS, we saw that people were being used as some kind of asset or operative who had heightened abilities of some sort, where they were used as a type of spy or, you know, asset in some capacity for either human military or aliens. So, but even part of this, aliens seem to be putting people together in love relationships where they would bond you several times throughout your life from childhood with another targeted partner, so that in these cases, like in the first book I wrote, The Love Bite, so those cases were people who had multiple alien visitations throughout their life and usually in the family line. So it was a kind of established pattern, and it could be genetics in this case. But anyway, that's how it started, was early defined and observed through these multiple bondings, and then they would meet this, quote, target partner later in life somewhere in their life, and oftentimes they were already married to another partner. So it set off a kind of, you know, love at first sight, deja vu, a powerful connection, but then a lot of emotional angst because, you know, they were married to somebody else or the other partner was married, and sometimes they had an affair, and then, it, you know, this whole drama unfolded with emotional highs and crashing lows and paranormal activity, precognitive events, synchronicity, and omens and all kinds of magical things that made the people think that they met their soulmate because it was so phenomenal. And truly, when you have a connection like this, you know it, because it is definitely out of this world. In fact, last night I just had a roundtable discussion event through Rise Multiversity where I and four others, actually we did a roundtable discussion all about the Love Bite and the Dark Side of Cupid. Everybody on the panel was somebody who has experienced it personally, as well as doing their own research or healing modalities as part of what they do for a living. So it was a really dynamite discussion about all the different nuances of what we experience when we have one of these, quote, alien love bites, and how to get through it. Because usually, you know, the first time it happens to you, you fall for it because it's so phenomenal. And it's like a love drug bliss feeling that is addictive. And it's something that Barbara Bartholet called the drama of the love obsession and the enchantment phase. And so it's almost as if you're thrown into this magical reality of being under a love spell with this, you know, high bliss and, you know, empathic connection, profound connection with the other person. So it's literally, you know, telepathic, basically. You know what the other person is thinking, feeling, doing. You can have mutually shared dreams. You know, your sex drive is through the roof. Your energy level, the kundalini could raise and create all these magical paranormal things in your life. But at the same time, what we notice is that the aliens or whoever these, quote, beings are that were doing this tended to interact more often during the drama of the love obsession, so that they were obviously either observing or harvesting or getting something out of this whole interaction that they put together, or sometimes they would disrupt a relationship. So in my Dark Side of Cupid, I talk about all the different things that they actually do and what could be experienced. So it's actually a wide bit of things that can happen. But I think energy vampirism is ultimately what they're doing, and that can be discerned once, let's say, you go through this and you know the signature and you know how it feels. And really, there's a feel to it. And so most of the experiences who've had it would say that they would have never known what it was until they had it happen to them. And that, you know, once you have it happen, then you could recognize it more or less. So
you recognize its signature.
Yeah. So anyway, there was something else that I was just going to mention, that in The Dark Side of Cupid, which is the second book, and the subtitle of that book is called Love Affairs, the Supernatural and Energy Vampirism. And that is actually, I wanted to make that book distinct from, quote, the alien love bite model, where the alien love bite was really about how the aliens or the ETs would put people together in these love affairs connections, or they would maybe disrupt them, break them up with somebody and put them up with somebody else. But in The Dark Side of Cupid, it was actually not clear that it was always some kind of alien, or if the person really had one of these classic alien visitation histories in their family or in their life, like multiple visitations. So, but what they did is they definitely was able to observe some kind of what I call a third-party entity or interdimensional type of being that was involved in usually hosting, possessing, or manipulating and somehow influencing the relationship itself that they were in. So in that book, I actually described several types of beings that were observed based on the perceptions of the one who reported it to me. And many of the people who were in that book who reported it were also very perceptive individuals themselves. They were clairvoyant by nature. So it was very interesting to get the firsthand views of what they observed. Like one woman saw a being that she felt was like this Mephistopheles, I can't say the word, but the ancient Faustian
Mephistopheles.
Mephistopheles, yes.
Get your fist off Elise. Mephistopheles.
But it was that type of entity that she saw, and then she actually saw the drawing in one of these old Solomon books on magic. And it was one of those beings. He was like a small with a big belly, big nose, big claw feet, and it was definitely the type one that she saw in a book. And she didn't see that book before. It wasn't like her imagination. But she had also seen like grays and Nordic types in her encounter associated with this particular man who was her partner, who was practicing a particular type of religious practice, let's put it that way. And it was these particular beings that were associated with him and his religious practice that really worked behind the scenes to put them together. So basically in that particular case, it was the Amian Thomas case, where he actually was the hosted one who was taken over and run by these particular types of entities, probably more than one, who literally fed off her sexual energy and life force energy, basically. So there's definitely a pattern there. And in that dark side of Cupid, in the more pronounced cases, really what you see is a type of psychopathology being displayed in the partners that were, let's say, hosted, more fully hosted by some kind of entity like a reptilian, but not always that kind of being. And they do have certain kinds of behaviors that are sociopathic and narcissistic, definitely emotional vampires, and definitely do create emotional highs, crashing lows, crazy-making behavior, and can affect their energy field because they have abilities to tap in to the energy field, like in certain chakras, for example, where they can heighten the sex drive to an unnatural degree, which is why this kind of relationship is so addictive and actually hard to get out of for some of these people. And that's one of the things that we discussed last night on our roundtable discussion, because there's this whole love drug quality to it that's like an addiction. And, you know, if it happens to you, it's actually difficult to not want to be engaged in that kind of connection, because there is an aspect of blissfulness to it. So
that is a fascinating thing, Evie. The idea that... Now, do you think that there's an actual kind of mechanism behind this obsession? Is there like a mind control or like a frequency that can be used to direct people like this, or is it just like a kind of psychic hypnosis programming kind of situation?
It's probably both. I think that there's definitely an ancient methodology to this that could be above and beyond any technology per se, although I think some technologies are being used and can definitely be used to simulate this kind of thing with the people who've had, let's say, the hardcore reptilian abductions or alien abductions or MILABs. We know most of them have some form of implant in their body that it may be physical, or sometimes it's not physical or observed on, let's say, a CAT scan or an X-ray, but usually they sense something in their bodies operating in certain parts of their body, like in their chakras or a certain area where it's actually responsible for linking in some kind of technology, or it's like it cords them to the entity, and that implant may exacerbate certain emotionals or frequencies, like certain emotions. And this could be something like nanites, even, that one of my people described, that it actually caused an amplification of some kinds of emotional reactions that was over and above the normal response. So I think that they do that, and they definitely use some forms of technology. In fact, one of the articles I was reading before I did this show, I just felt compelled to read it, and it was the I did an interview with a woman who basically observed that she was in a long-term marriage with a husband who had become hosted or possessed over time by a, let's say, a reptilian type of entity that she first saw as like an iguana type of entity interdimensionally, like on his shoulder. And this happened after he frequented these strip clubs over a number of years in a couple different cities. And so she was able to clairvoyantly see the entity that was overshadowed over her husband, as well as the technology that linked him into it. So there was a technology, and so she did this whole thing where she did drawings of what she clairvoyantly was able to see of the technology that was basically over the strip club, as well as the bank in that particular building, and another club that was from another town where he actually contracted these entities and technologies and to begin with. So it happened, I think it can happen both ways, actually. So, and I've had other people report this. This wasn't the only report of somebody who was able to see these things kind of clairvoyantly. So it depends, I guess, on your perception and observation. If you know what to look for, you can definitely start seeing these things. Like she talked about how her husband, you know, definitely changed over time, and he definitely, you know, there was an entity overshadowing him, and his smell changed, his behaviors changed, his eyes, the way he looked changed, the way he responded to things changed, everything in him changed. So, you know, sometimes this can happen over time.
Very interesting. Do you know, I have a personal, strange personal theory. I've got a zillion strange personal theories, but one of them involves yeast. That my belief is that it's a nanotechnology that was given to us by these badass ancient gods, who call themselves gods, and is essentially a kind of nano, control system that creates cancer in the end, becomes candida, becomes cancer. And that, you know, it's totally wrong for us, you know, it's like that's an ancient form of this. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because a lot of biological parasites and things in this world in terms and viruses appear to be not natural to the normal scheme of things. If you tuned into the natural creative spirit of all that is, you would come to find that there's some things I think in this world that are based on some kind of genetically modified monster bug to, I don't know, it just doesn't seem right. And you know, I couldn't prove this, but certainly viruses and bacteria and fungus and different kinds of parasites could be vectors for nanotechnology for all we know, and to actually change our DNA, just like vaccines could actually change our DNA or do start to do that. And there's actually a scientist who's a biochemist and a writer. His name is, Patrick Jordan, wrote a book on that and described how vaccines actually genetically modify over time us. And that's part of the long-term plan, is to basically dummy us down so that our genetic expression of our higher faculties don't happen, so that we don't spiritually evolve, so that we could stay basically dummied down, unaware slaves for who's ever farming us.
And so that brings us to the point, Evie. The last two words you said, farming us. It's not, we're not here for 9 to 5. We're here to produce product. Well, that's what they are trying to use us for. I mean, we obviously have our own natural organic purpose, which I think is, I'm led to believe it's quite noble. But what they're using us for is, you know, they're using incredibly powerful psychic beings to basically juicing. Like you know, we like juicing oranges, aren't we?
Well, that's what Barbie would always say, you know, they're just, you know, milking us as cattle, and, you know, she'd make jokes about it. And truly, in the Alien Love Bite and in The Dark Side of Cupid, it's basically, it zeroes in on exactly, you know, what it is in terms of, if you wanted to pick the purest source of what they're looking for, it's the life force itself of the purest soul essence, or a lot of it is sexual energy that comes into the body and emotional energy of different frequencies. So they'll take a number of frequencies of what we produce, but we produce it. It's as if they cannot produce it for themselves in the same way. And even in that movie, I know Jupiter Ascending, which has come out recently, they make inferences that, of course, the gods, which, you know, are like these ancient mythological Olympians, actually live a long time because they literally feed on us, our life force, our soul, to basically live extended lifetimes and then manipulate Earth and many other civilizations as a kind of business. So I think there's a kind of vampirism going on with certain types of beings that ultimately they must have disconnected from the creative source themselves, or something happened to them so that they have to vampirize. And then they become a part of like a collective hive mind once that happens. And I've heard that that happens actually with people who, let's say, sell their soul to the devil, so to speak, where once they do that, they go through a change where they're literally disconnected from their highest spirit essence, I guess. And then that spirit essence is used toward the collective hive of the dark side, whatever. And then from then on, their soul is used as a puppet by the hive mind that they just gave themselves over to. And then from then on, they basically have to do what the hive directs them to do. They become puppets. And when they become those puppets, you observe their behavior. Like, let's say some of these that are taken over in the entertainment industry. We won't name any names, but...
let's talk about someone with enormous thighs.
Okay, I'm not going to name
the first one that comes to mind. Pair of thighs. I know those thighs. Anyway.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking of. It's funny. But yeah, I mean, this is what I heard through many researchers who've done lots of, quote, deep research into the dark side. And basically, if people do sell themselves over and do make that contract, there's a change that comes over them where they have to be used as puppets in some capacity for whatever agenda, aspect of the agenda that they're put in charge of. But they do the vampirization thing, which really manifests as a lot of emotional vampirism and ridiculous dramas and stupidity and sex games and sometimes violence, sometimes sexual rituals, sometimes killing, sometimes it could be anything. But when you look at the behaviors of what I wrote about in The Dark Side of Cupid in terms of the psychopathic, quote, hosted vampire type of partner, those are the kind of behaviors of someone who's been taken over, where they have to feed on someone else's life force. And then they will engage in those kind of behaviors because that's how they can elicit the energy. You see? It's an energy vampirism operation.
That's right. So, for instance, if somebody was wanting to harvest anger, they would do things that would annoy and irritate the person. And then whatever they were connected to would kind of loosh off that. I love that word, loosh, by the way.
Yeah, loosh. That's a good word, you know. And in fact, I always find it amazing what people have reported to me who have, let's say, extrasensory perception, where they can actually see, let's say, the auras of some of these people who've been taken over, or the energetic manifestations. I've had some people describe seeing octopus-like tentacles coming out of these people, like auras, like linking in, and of like dark colors, or a Medusa, snaky type of things. Or sometimes it's just a simple like reptilian lizard, or it could be a winged serpent, could be a Draco with wings. In fact, there's on my website, on that other article that I mentioned, it was actually the Reptilian Hosting and Strip Clubs was the first interview article, and then there was a part two that was an update. But in both articles, I have a link to actually some drawings that were given to me, sent to me by a French researcher, where a French clairvoyant who didn't really know anything about aliens, right, but he just saw what he saw clairvoyantly, and he drew pictures that perfectly describe what happens when someone gets partially possessed or linked into by some of these entities. And he actually did, I think, four different drawings. The first drawing was like a classic reptile, reptoid type of creature, and they're usually a lot taller than a human body, like, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 feet tall, 7, 8, whatever. And then there was like a insectoid that had wings that looked similar to a type of Oros Ra entity that's described in some of Dr. Corrado Malanga's reports, with the wings and the really long beaky snout kind of thing. And I've had reports of different kinds of things seen. So there's different types of interdimensional beings that have different forms that may overshadow and link into the energy field. So some people could see these things.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is perception. Because, hang on, I'll just take that echo off. Because one of the problems with all of these things is, and you know, it's like a circular thing. Okay, so part of the truth that we're uncovering is that we've been kind of modified so that we are, quote, dumbed down. What does that mean? Is that we have a narrower band of perception than we had.
Yes.
We don't receive telepathy, and that we have got this kind of circuit in there that understands the spoken word as a command language.
It's interesting. Yes.
I was an IT guy, a computer programmer, and one of the most programming-like languages is Hebrew, because it's entirely consistent.
Oh wow!
And it obeys rules that are just very consistent. So you could almost make a computer program to create Hebrew, because it's like very easily. Well, I mean, you can.
It's like archontic origin.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've ever remembered the original David Icke interview with Credo Mutwa, the African shaman. I don't know if it was West African shaman or South African.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah,
but probably. In that interview, he talked about the Chitauri or the Chitauli, I don't know. The reptilian / Anunnaki, how they knew them in their culture and his shamanic lineage. And these beings actually were perceived by the children and people because they were naturally more rooted to the earth and more perceptive. A lot of these native cultures are. Well, the kids would naturally see these beings like interdimensionally. Then once they got vaccinated, they lost their ability to perceive them. But actually, the point I wanted to make about this Chitauli was that in that myth of the origin of the human race, it had something to do with, in the beginning, it was an androgynous being that got split into two, male and female. And then in the androgynous earlier phase, they didn't really have physical language as we understand it, but that the Chitauli were very highly adept at language. And so when we were split into male and female, then language was the prime form of communication, which I think now, based on NLP and the understanding of how people hypnotize and control through neurolinguistic programming, that's part of a control thing. That if you didn't have to use language in that way, you wouldn't be as easily manipulated, because I think the original species, well, the primordial human, was probably much more telepathic and androgynous and in tune with the earth. And there's even, I guess, myths about that I read through some of Wes Penra's papers and documents. Well, I was very fascinated by this because it seemed to link in with what I sense as the truth, that the early form of human was a androgynous in a female body, and they were highly, they were very psychic, and they had a lot of life force of the creative mother goddess, so they were like natural shamans. And I think that it's that gene and that essence that they're trying to exploit in the humans. And that this is something that they've been following through bloodlines for millennia, and it is transmitted matrilineally. And this has been something that's real important. Actually, goes back to the Hebrews, but it's really
matrilinear. Yeah,
really, it's like when you see like who's being abducted, and you file what bloodline are they following, and why are they taking some in some families and some. Like, they'll take one of the kids, but not all three, or they'll take two of the five, and it'll go through maybe only the mother's bloodline, and there's something that's passed matrilineally. And what I think that is, I think it has something to do with what Wes Penra talked about in his document, level 4 document, where it has something to do with the spirit fire of the mother goddess gene that was in the primordial human, which was a female body that was androgynous. So it had the ability to create, but it's something to do with that gene that I think they're trying to exploit and control and follow through the bloodlines. And so when they find these women, I mean, I've talked to people who've been in these, let's say, bloodline families where they're in some kind of, I could call it MKUltra, but it's even more refined than that than what most people know. There's an occult level of this that is much more hidden in terms of programming and how they really follow you, not only in the bloodline from genetics, but from life to life based on your soul. But there's something that they do follow that traces back to that original primordial race or gene. And then they will use certain people who have these high level psychic abilities and creative manifestation abilities. And then they will try to exploit and hijack them and use them as mother goddesses in these dark rituals. Basically, they'd been taken over by, quote, the false gods who were disconnected from the divine source. So they have to exploit those who actually still have the connection and then control it. And if they can't control it, they'll try to get rid of them, basically. So
yeah, kill or control.
That's what I've come to learn, yeah.
So let's talk about these so-called gods, these big dudes. Yeah, here's my imagination. Here's another one of my weird little scenes. Here's my imagination, right? There's this ship lands on the planet, and there's these delightful little people. And out from this ship steps these big bearded giants, and they look up at the guys and go, "Oh, we've heard stories about big people like you. Are you our gods?" And the giant goes, "Yes, of course we're your gods." and then it just got worse, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with giants, because I'm hearing a lot about that. I think David Wilcock brought that up more recently.
So he did. So he did. Yes.
And there was, I don't know who else, it was Lloyd Pye and someone else who had basically the skulls that showed some of these giants, you know, how tall they were, and they had red hair. But there was other things that came up that seemed to signal that there's a race of giants that, maybe there's some good ones and some bad ones, and some of these good ones might be our original progenitors that were then, maybe we were genetically modified and changed several times. You know, that's why we got so small and our lives are so short now.
Yeah, it's like we've been kind of, well, do you remember how the first mobile phones were? They were big, and now they're like, they'd fit inside your palm. You know, you could probably get one that fits on the end of your fingernail, fully functional, and you stick it in your ear. But technology gets smaller, doesn't it? So maybe that's what you're talking about. You know, we've managed to refine the skin suit so that it doesn't have to occupy so much of a huge space, and it's very handy for mining gold and building little buildings and, you know, doing all sorts of things. Look at what humans can do.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you stress them out, you also, not only do you get them to build stuff for you, but you can also harvest their louche. What a wonderful creature. It's better than having chickens. You know. Have you gone? You broke off a bit there. Yeah, hang on. Hang on a second. Where are we losing the thing? Yes, let's try and get that back. Right, hang on, I'm just gonna call her back. That probably was too emotional for them. I was talking about the idea that humans not only are good for you know, building things for you, building your temples, building your houses, but if you stress us, we also give off this wonderful aphrodisiac drug, the louche thing as well. And as I said, you know, it's better than keeping chickens.
Yeah, we must do that somehow. Of course, in my research with the dark side of Cupid, it appeared that a lot of the emotions that at least the reptilians and the lower emanating, resonating ones, they liked the darker emotions, like, you know, rage and jealousy and longing and despair and unrequited love. But I think there's also, you know, a whole range of emotions that they may also like. And I think there's different kinds of beings who may feed off, let's say, worship and devotion and not want or desire lower energies, that they're just another type of entity that may also feed off of us. So Yeah.
I get the feeling that they feed off us from every single pore, every single opening, even if there aren't any openings, they'll make them. You know, every point they can get some juice out of us, then they will, because we are so juicy. You know, we emanate juice on all different levels. You know, we make harmony, we make sound, we have psychic emanations, we have, you know, there's all this stuff. And, you know, like I said, you know, we're better than chickens. And there you go again. Maybe I shouldn't say chicken.
Yeah, sometimes, it's sheep, cows, humans. Yeah. But that's some people even have reported to me, like where they had a, let's say, abduction, but it was more like a sighting. And then she realized that she was taken for a short period of time with two other individuals. And this happened in a daylight sighting where this woman, because she just happened to be more aware, she was one of these more aware types of abductee people. And the beings that took her in that particular encounter were the ones that she said that were the tall whites, which they look like grays, except they have very, very pale skin, and then the black eyes. But they're a lot taller, and they're considered a little more, quote, friendly. And I think Charles Hall talked about this particular type of alien. But in her experience, these aliens actually admitted to her that we give them something that they consider a delicacy. And they were actually in the process of trying to bond her to another man that they took also on the craft. And then they made a statement that they can tell by the energy tendrils that emanate out of their energy bodies and how they connect to others. They're able to tell if you have a karmic connection with someone. And so they would choose those that tended to already have these tendrils or karmic connections. And they would basically amplify that such that these two people would have a connection with one another or more likely to come together in one of these like love bites. Bonding kind of things. So she was actually told that, yeah, they feed off this and this is a delicacy for them.
It's not even like their lives depend on this stuff. This is like coke.
Yeah, I don't know if their lives depend on it. I sometimes wonder, like in the cases of true vampires, and I've had people report that too, that they have to have this life source. Because if they don't have it, they go nutty or they age rapidly. And there's some that are believed to live a longer time, you know, like the real vampires that live hundreds of years. But they have to feed, you know. So I think there's something to that. And that if they lose their source, they die naturally, you know.
Well, that's a conundrum, isn't it? It's like if you are a chicken, do you have much say in whether you're going to be tonight's meal or tomorrow's?
Yeah. Of course, I hate to look at it that way. You know, I mean, I like to look at it as that we do have the ability to become free and aware, but it's certainly something that we have to work at, and it's a constant discovery, really, of learning. So I don't want it to make it sound like it's all horrible and we're hopeless, but it's certainly... You know, we're definitely not the highest on the food chain, you know?
Yep. And again, you know, this comes back to our original premise at the beginning of the show. You know, the world is not what we are led to believe. You personally, have you had clairvoyant experiences? Have you had... experiences of like being able to see or perceive beyond what we normally see and see what lays behind it and what's influencing it. Is that, and if that was a gift, who would give that gift? Would that be something that you were given as a protection against these beings, or would the beings give you that as well? Is that a complex question? Or
actually, will you know? Well, those things both happens. I mean, I've had experiences, but I don't consider myself a psychic. I mean, I've seen things, but it's usually inadvertent and spontaneous. It's not something I can do at will. But with people I know who are connected to certain kinds of interdimensional beings, Sometimes it's the beings themselves that give them these paranormal abilities, and certain witches and magicians and even shamans can make pacts or bindings with certain beings that they're linked in their field, and then these beings will, you know, travel around and basically be intel gatherers and give them information and precognitive stuff. I mean, they get abilities from the entities, or the, like Satanists, for example, they just get demons, right? And then the demons will, they have certain jobs and they do things for them. So they can have abilities because of the entities. And then sometimes you have the natural abilities just because of just who you are. And it's just natural. So I think that the ones who are natural, that they try to exploit, and there's a gene somehow, they can follow that, or they could track that in the people, some of those people who get abducted and then used, they're sheep dipped in some of these my lab ops, or
hang on a second, Evie. You
know, psychic ops, for example, like remote viewers. And there's some who have natural abilities, and then they try to exploit and control those abilities to, for whatever needs they have, you know. So that happens a lot.
Okay, are you with me?
Are you still there?
Yeah.
We get cut off again.
We got a big delay. let me just call you back. Lots of buffering tonight. I don't know what it's all about, but anyway, so yes. Your last paragraph is
talk about that. I'm not sure you just on that last paragraph there.
Yeah, your last paragraph got a bit garbled, and we're still a bit garbling.
Figure, huh?
I'm going to have to switch the Wi-Fi off or something. Anyway, to stop the neighbors from using the computer.
We're talking about, you know, deep black ops stuff. You know, I mean, when we talk about paranormal abilities and why they take certain people in these MILAB operations or abductions or blood families. And it seems to me that there's some that they use for combat reasons, or the super soldiers for, you know, super soldier types of ops, and it may be a range of abilities they have. For the women, they tend to use them as the psychic occult operations more, or the sexual things. And that's just what they do. So, yeah. But the women by far seem to be the more sensitive in terms of clairvoyant abilities. And there's a certain element of how the kundalini energy and even sexual energy can actually magnify those abilities. So that's one of the things that I talked about, I don't, in my Love Bite book, I think, or perhaps in The Dark Side of Cupid, where some female, what I call MILABs, who are people who've had lifelong alien abductions, as well as a military component, where the military were working in conjunction with certain alien races, like the Greys and the Reptilians, for example, or and the Mantis, then they would use these women. The aliens would have a certain reason for using them, and then the military would also use them. So sometimes their energy field, their sexual energy, their kundalini would get activated by a reptilian being in particular, because they're really good at that, and they know how to do that really well. And then once they activate their energy field where the kundalini rises, then that amplifies their psychic abilities, simply because of the energy amplification that takes place through that. And then the military would come and take them right after that happened, and then use them to go in remote view or whatever they wanted to use them for. And a lot of times it was as if they were out of the body or bilocating, and there was a lot of that kind of going on too.
So part of
that is, you know, the reason why they do that is to amplify their energy field so that they can, you know, exploit and utilize their psychic abilities, or the psi ability, the psi factor. That's what I call
that's
it.
Very, that's a really interesting point, Evie, because many people, you know, would say, why are the military adding insult to injury? But you just explained it, because when somebody is abducted...
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, because we talked about that, I guess it was on... Eva's show, and fortunately we probably got interruptions, and there was a lot of concerns about this whole super soldier thing.
Yeah, we have a connection as well here on War Spirit Radio, so I'll give you that in a minute, but sorry, continue your point.
Yeah, because I think this is important, because at some point along the way, and people have known this, right, with the whole Truman Eisenhower Grenada Treaty with the Greys kind of thing that happened early on after World War II, that there was some kind of pact or Faustian bargain made with malevolent alien races, certainly with questionable integrity and motives down the line, where they would use human subjects in abductions in exchange for certain kinds of technologies. And so this had definitely military applications, so that down the line, you know, the military were in conjunction with these aliens. But what I'm seeing is that the aliens are basically taking control. They know how to manipulate a human, you know, pretty well. They've been doing this for how many thousands of years? So it's going to be easy for them to completely take over the military and the people in charge with their implant technology and how they can manipulate people, which is pretty easy. Okay. When I see how they do this, especially sexual manipulation, ego manipulation, implants and emotions and how they can do this, it's very easy to manipulate someone to do your will and basically have the entities run you. Like, almost like a possession kind of thing, but it's not exactly that, but it's more of a parasitism. So that's a real issue, because I think there's people who really want to care about the human race and really want to defend against some of these more malevolent and ETs, if you want to call them. So it's a serious issue, if you ask me. And what's sad is that a lot of these people in these secret programs, which they pretend they don't exist, right? But these people have been traumatized from childhood to deliberately, you know, like MK Ultra, right? They split the minds through trauma, creating multiple personality disorder. And then they have systematized programming that takes place via those traumas and alter personalities, along with whatever entities and programs they link into the person. So the person can have phenomenal abilities because of this, quote, training and trauma, but they're also led and run by these entities and the programs that they've been programmed by, which is not good, because it requires that they are unintegrated and unhealed and uncleared. So what really happens is it takes them further and further away from their true spirit, divine self. And so this is a real problem, because the further traumatized and unhealed you are, the more likely you can be manipulated and run by these entities, which is happening, obviously. I mean, all you have to do is look at what's happening in the world, and you can see there's a problem, you know. So a big part of what Eva and I discussed was that in order to really, you know, take our power back and to heal and to clear, you know, these people who've been through trauma or some kind of made a pact, or they're in a family line where they're born under what they call born rights because of occult control and some of these bloodlines, you have to basically break the agreements and contracts, belief systems, and the programs, as well as clearing the traumas and the entities associated with them to become clear, so you can connect to your true divine source instead of whatever else you're hearing, which a lot of the times are the entities that are the heads of these religions, or sometimes it's just a program, a mind control program or whatever. But to be clear, this is the real issue. We've been so programmed to think life is something else, or to think that the gods are the gods of these particular religions, like the big patriarchal ones in particular, that, you know, it's very questionable whether or not they're truly good gods, or they're just playing a game, they're just part of the game. So we really have to connect to that truth that's within us, that we do have that within us. But in order to do that, we have to clear so much falsehood, and a lot of these are belief systems that we've held to be true for, you know, how long, thousands of years. Indeed. So it's more about releasing belief systems and connecting deeply with your core, but that takes a lot of clearing traumas and a lot of healing, and you can lose some friends over this, I can tell you that.
So this is very, very, very interesting point, Evie. This is, right, so I started this radio station with Dave Corso, among others, and eventually it ended up Dave and I, and then Dave died last year, and Dave Corso was the Generation One super soldier. It was like from the 1940s and 30s, he was chosen for his bloodline, for K Celtic Sicilian, I think that was what he was trying to say, with a smattering of Native American.
Of course. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Because the Native Americans are fearless. Mm-hmm. The Celtic, I think it was the Celtic, sure of eye. He could fire a gun, he could hit somebody like miles away, 17, I think it was like a ridiculously large number of miles and hit them. He trained everybody to be snipers, and he trained the next generations of super soldiers, who then came on the radio show. So we've had Duncan O'Finian, and he's a friend and a guest, and he's always welcome here. And in the early days, we also had Aaron McCullum. And Aaron McCullum, you'll know that name, used to talk about his experiences doing my labs. And then there's this other guy who is extremely changeable, Michael Prince stroke James Casbolt.
Yeah, he got busted. He's in prison now, right?
Is he? Right. Well, I don't know. Maybe because he's... anyway, he's probably working with a hairpin somewhere, you know, escaping, like Steve McQueen in The Great Escape. But anyway, all of these guys have painted a picture that, number one, they are mind-controlled. And so when they do these MyLabs, they're not them.
Yeah, that's the trouble. It's like you can't, it's like a program that runs you, and that's one of the biggest things that had come up in the early years is, you know, how do they get their abilities back, you know? They know that they have these extraordinary abilities, but they can't access them consciously. Yes. Not all of them, but some of them can.
Yes.
Some of them can do that. But there's a question of, you know, is it an entity doing it for them, or is it just because they're still under control? So in my view, the best way to get back the control is to release the entities and the programs, and then to integrate. But in order to integrate, we have to basically dissolve the compartmentalized walls that were created through trauma, and the trauma creates the trapped emotional energy of, you know, terror, fear, grief, whatever that is, which is very hard to deal with, and that's part of the survival of the person who has it happen, usually at a very young age, and then they split them from then on out. So you have to clear the traumas, which means at some point you have to remember and then release it. And in order to do that, then you can basically integrate that part of yourself, and then you can integrate the ability as well. But it's really hard to do. I think that they get triggered and they don't want to relive it, so they opt out.
That's right. Well, that's the same with just about everybody. You know, nobody wants to go through their triggers.
It's hard.
It's hard. But I tell you, we do it every day. Nobody wants to, but everything that annoys us, everything that sets us off, they're triggering us. And we're feeling those feelings and emotions that, you know, that if we can turn around and recognize, if we can feel that in a kind of controlled environment, in a more comfortable place, where where body is less likely to react and make a mess of things, we can hold the energy and redirect somebody's attention back to the place where it needs to be, which is the internal child, is the soul thread. That's where it comes in. Evie, we're going to take a break right now, if that's all right. And I'm going to play a tune, which is, I love this tune. This is back in the 90s. It's called You're Not Alone by Olive. I don't know if you had it in the States, but it was, it's very atmospheric. Anyway, enjoy this.
Okay.
We're talking about the super soldier. So, welcome back to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. Who's still connected? I think I'm still on TNSL. I had to disconnect from one because too much contention. So, thank you everybody for staying on. If you wish to chat with our lovely audience, we're all in the Wolf Spirit Radio chat room. If you go to wolfspiritradio.com/wolfchat, you'll get there. And hey, let me just do this. I've got a thing. Oh no, it's gone now. I put them all the way up there. That's stupid. I've got something that does this, and it. I want to tell everybody this is. These are new jingles that are recorded in 432 hertz. So enjoy these. Please join us in the chat room at wowwowwow.wolfspiritradio.com/wolfchat. You'll be able to see and chat with the other listeners. You can make new friends and have discussions about the topics that are being discussed on the show. That's www.wolfspiritradio.com/wolfchat. If you wish to simply donate, we appreciate any donations. They help us pay for the stream servers and the Skype telephone numbers and things like that. All the rest of it is done completely voluntarily by all of our staff and producers. Wolf Spirit Radio. Call in to Wolf Spirit Radio in Britain on 0141 356 4141. That's 0141 356 4141. And in America, 775-773-3431. 775-773-3431. On Skype, it's Wolf Spirit Radio. Welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio. Yeah, and welcome back. So that's such a people are going to just be hypnotized by that because it's got 432 drone going on there, and it's also got the rhythm of the native drum, the doom 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 doom.
Ah, and the wolf.
And the wolf. Yeah. Because
how did that start with this radio? I'm curious who started it and why.
Okay, Wolf Spirit Radio. Okay, so where did it start? Originally, we all met in Rebecca Jernigan's chat room. And I met Dave Corso and Tracy Kendi and various others. And there was a point when Rebecca invited me on the show, and I started talking about my soul ray readings, and that I started organizing people according to their soul groups. And there was one soul group, which was the first ray monad and second ray soul. And I created a group, and that included, it seemed that everybody who was in there grew out of, grew from this. This group, we were joined by Muggsy as well. We created this, station kind of, we all had our little station, then we grew, sort of all gathered them together. And Muggsy had a dream, so she had Muggsy's a psychic, so she had this this vision of, like, we could, create a station that is free of Microsoft influence. So currently our all of our not all of our but as much as our software that we run our stuff is avoiding Microsoft like the plague, but we can't, it's like it's like yeast, it's hard to get rid of. Dave was here, and Dave was a, he loved wolves.
Okay.
And one of his, programmed altars was a wolf called Herkimer.
Oh, okay. And yeah, I know someone else who's got that, so it's interesting.
Yeah, it's probably one of the standard programs, they train certain altars to be like certain animals.
Yeah.
To have some heightened senses. Dave also had a robotic, like, computerized, calculating kind of personality. Mm. He had about 15, I think, and nobody knows what triggered them. Occasionally he would trigger, and he would be like, as he realizes that he's been, as he comes back and realizes that he's not been there, it would pee me off as well. Anyway, Dave had all these wolves. One of them was called Herc, and we all, it was like our family. And Dave, like a wolf, and like a, brought everybody And eventually he renamed the group the Wolf Pack. Then we had some graphic design. We sort of bring it further together, and it started out as what did it become? Wolfpack Radio or something like that. And then there was very quickly that blew up, like after about a month, having these fantastic graphics and everything. And then let's call it Wolf Spirit Radio. I did the Sundays, and Dave did every other day at certain times. There are more. You know, we had many more producers at the time, and we hope to have more producers in the future. And I'm training more up as we're doing it. So anyway, that's how it all became Wolf Spirit Radio. And then after Dave died last year, having appeared to just about every medium and psychic saying, JP's going to look after it, okay? And I'm not kidding. I must have had about 50 people say, oh, yeah, Dave came to me and said, you know, you're doing a great job and all things like that. I don't get so much anymore. But he even appeared through a medium. We were going to have scheduled to have a Pleiadium channel. And she says, like, I don't know that... You know, if this sounds a bit crazy to you, but this guy has been bugging me all week. He says he's called Dave.
Oh, wow.
And he was speaking on the show, and it's in the archives, and it was like, this is proof of spirit, right? We're here. The entire job, to my mind, the entire job of all of what we call New Age is simply to prove spirit.
Hmm.
And if you can prove spirit, if you can make it real, realize it, and make it work through your life, then you are living a spiritual life. And it's not about having to wear white clothes or carry things around with you or wear hats or have headbands. It's just about the way that you express yourself and the relationship that you have with the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So... having said all that, we were talking about super soldiers and how they would be present at my labs, and mm-hmm. because what they would do, I remember Aaron talking. He said, "I didn't do things with them; I just went to collect them." So he was like a courier. They would send a program into him to say, "Go get this person at this house. Use this ship."
Oh, wow.
You know, use the light, beam them down, beam them up. They've got the technologies. You know? They got it. And they would take them to somewhere, wherever. He didn't know. He's just programmed to be a courier.
Yeah.
So it's a human-robot thing. And I think the point we were getting to is that this is going to get much more complex than Nuremberg. Because the old "I was simply following orders" doesn't apply anymore, because my body was being hijacked.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Okay, now, other people might argue, well, perhaps there is some contract that you have made at other times that puts you into these programs and makes you available. Like you were saying before, you know, if you're satanically possessed, it makes you available in the future. Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Although it's not that simple. I think there's what we call agreements of entrapment that people don't even realize they're making. And then there's forced trauma that basically throws you out of your body, and then entities have the opportunity to come in when you dissociate. So they do that on purpose anyway. So, but in certain families, I mean, we found this to be a commonality with many abductees or some MILABs, is that one of their parents or somebody in their family was associated with a high-level occult fraternal organization, which is well-known, as well as any alphabet soup agencies, long-time career type of things, or defense-contracted things like aerospace. And so there was always some kind of connection. And then once that connection was there, then those children and the downline were more easily accessed and put into these programs. But I really think it's the occult control that is the higher level of control, even over the military and some of these other programs, because they're full of people who are all mind controlled, most of them, or they don't even know it, actually. they don't know the level of the control they're over until they maybe wake up later, but most of them don't wake up fully. That's the sad part.
That is the sad part. And Dave said when he the thing that woke him up is, I think, it was when his son, I think his son was about 19, and one day he said, "Dad, what did you do in Vietnam?" And Dave said, "I don't know." And from that point onwards, he had nightmares. And one of the nightmares involved Duncan O'Finion.
Oh.
As a child.
Yeah.
They were in Vietnam, and things were going badly. And suddenly they had a helicopter above. The helicopter landed. 12 children came out, accompanied by this slightly lankier one, with a great big afro, apparently.
Yeah.
Brown afro. And they all joined hands in a circle. There was a huge white flash, and every single enemy soldier was dead.
Yeah, I remember Duncan telling that story.
Yeah. So, what the heck's going on? You know, what can they do, these people?
Yeah.
And why can't they just build houses for us and, like, heal the sick? I mean, imagine that energy put into healing. If you put one of those people in a hospital, people would just walk in and then walk out healthy again.
Oh, yeah, and I think they have that technology in what they call the breakaway civilization, which is really, you know, the secret government and organizations that, you know, have access to the technology in these MILAB programs. They have access to what they call the resurrection technology and the rapid healing and, you know, age regression, supposedly, like for the people who talked about Mars Defense Force, basically 20-year terms. And then being age regressed back so that it was as if time never went by, but they had like 20 years of time in another, on Mars. So
it's exciting
technology that is used, but it's kept secret for only them, which is really not fair. I think that, you know, there's still a controlling, ruling elite that's feeding off of us and making us use these archaic technologies that's part of the greed and the corporations and keeps us slaves and sick, and, you know, that's how they feed off of us. But really, we have the technology, and it's been available. It's just that it's in the wrong hands, I guess.
Well, we are discovering it. Here on Wolf Spirit Radio, we like to deal with solutions. You know, it's good enough knowing what's going on, but we like to go further. You know, how do we empower ourselves to do these things? And most of the time, it's an internal technology. It's all about learning how not to react to something will give, or you know, to not to ingest things. You know, like fluoride or aspartame or yeast. I mean, really, beer and bread, people. Sorry, Evie, but beer and bread, people. Where does it get you? I know bread's nice and you got this, but you're addicted. I'm sorry. You're addicted to bread. It's bad news. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, but you're addicted to bread because you're addicted to sugar because you've got yeast infection.
Oh, yeah.
Ta-ra! There's the truth. Everybody, you'll be free. I tell you, you'll be so much freer if you deal with the yeast and starve of sugar and things like that. And I'm only able to say that because I have hardly eaten any sugar for the last 4 days. I've hardly eaten anything, actually. It's quite interesting. The less sugar you eat, the less you want to eat.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm a big guy, you know. What would you be? I can't remember. I've no idea. But I've lost 3 inches.
Gosh.
Like
the wheat, you mean?
This is like cutting out wheat. It took a while. The first thing I did was cut out meat because my guides told me stop eating death. Mm. And then I thought wheat next, and then sweet last. That's the hardest one. Because I grew up, my grandparents had a sweet shop.
Oh, my.
Yeah. You know, confectionery, and tobacconists. My grandfather sold the world's most addictive drug, the world's second most addictive drug, and propaganda, otherwise known as a confectioner and newsagent.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Isn't it terrible? It's like we see this nowadays. Oh, my God. Oh. How terrible things were. Meanwhile, back in, like, relationships that don't serve you, and my labs and soul signatures and throw it all together. Evie, we've got about 40 minutes. I don't think anybody's going to call in, but if they do, just let us have it. It's lovely. You're doing it.
I think it's more pronounced when I worked with the Milab people and started learning about their lives, that they definitely had relationships that were set up and designed, and oftentimes they were set up with other Milabs or a partner that would either stabilize them to keep them in the program they're in, or to control them like a handler. Sometimes they would have a partner that was more like a handler and sent in to keep them under control so they wouldn't wake up and break programming. So it seems to be a pattern with many people who've had these experiences. They'll get one after the other, one love bite after the other, until they do.
One love bite after another. One laugh by after another. Let's do this again. Let's reconnect. One laugh by after another. One love by after another. One love by after another. Go ahead.
I guess they don't like that, huh?
It's too close to the bone. Go ahead.
Relationships. No, but there's a pattern there, and that's one of the things that was more pronounced with the Milab people or the super soldiers. They had a more pronounced love bite thing where their relationships were put together or disrupted or controlled in some way. And it usually related to their handlers or their programmers or the entities or government agency that was working with them would send them in somebody that would be, you know, the best partner for them to keep them in the program. More likely, you know, he's usually a controlling one. Sometimes they could send you a handler, like a lot of the female Milabs would get sent a controlling partner to basically keep them unsettled so they could never get to their healing process and become free, or they would be their handlers, you know. So that happens a lot. And sometimes it happens more subtly, though. It's more like they're sleepers, like the ones they send in to you. They're not really knowing agents per se. They're sleepers, or they're run by entities or programs, and they're not even aware of their own programs. So it's like there's this hidden realm of control in this interdimensional level, as well as a mind control programming level that goes on. So when you really want to become free, I mean, this is something we brought up in our discussion last night on the round table, where one of the people was a experiencer of what I call a dark side of Cupid love bite type of relationship. And this was someone who really wasn't somebody who had an abduction, alien, or Milab history. It was just like, quote, a normal person. But after he got involved with doing research in, you know, consciousness, spirituality, he did a film. And then it was after that he had one basic love bite, dark Cupid relationship after another by partners who were completely manipulated by entities, or it was that dynamic. So in his case, it was the targeting. Basically a targeting against somebody who's waking up and who's spreading the truth and becoming empowered. So there's a targeting aspect to this whole love bite thing, as well as the original alien love bite, you know? So that's why it's really important to know how to identify that and nip it in the bud or deal with it as you can with healing and communication and integration, clearings, so that both partners are aware. And more often than not, one person's more aware than the other, or one partner is completely unaware or in denial, and that makes it very difficult. So in my book, I talk about what to do about that.
The Dark Side of Cupid book.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm going to have to read these. I'm going to have to go off to Amazon. Where's the best place? Where do you make most money?
Amazon.com and also Barnes & Noble. It's available hard copy and Kindle or the ebook, whatever. And, of course, my website at evelorgan.com has a whole menu button on the books where you can read about it, the synopsis, and also do a link directly to Amazon is really the easiest way to get the book. But I felt like, you know, after I had done all this research with the alien abductions and, you know, the MILABs, the super soldiers, the abuse, it was really, really important to write about the relationship dynamic aspect, which I know is not real popular for some people who prefer a more rational, scientific, or historical approach to the subject matter. But really, if we don't do the deeper work of healing and recognition of this and clearing of it, the problem will remain. So we have to do deeper work and expanding our awareness. And that has to do with the therapeutic process, really, by becoming in tune with how you're feeling and what traumas may still be hidden. So it's really about listening to yourself, your spirit, your feelings, your heart, and learning how to set boundaries and know when your energy field's being invaded, perhaps, like when a being is interdimensionally interfering, how to recognize that, what the red flags of that is. So I think that's very important. And it's really about expanding your awareness, becoming much more sensitive to what's happening so that we have more control over our life.
Thank you. Now, okay, so out of that, if you wouldn't mind just kind of demonstrating a little nugget of that, would be, and this would of course be, you know, two very important questions. Number one, how do I know if I have been, if I'm doing the love biting? How would I know if I was under the control of one of these entities? What would be a kind of big red flag symptom that would express that? And then on the other hand, in another person, how would you recognize that was going on? Those are, I think, that, you know, and then if people get any of those, if that triggers anybody, then they should buy your book, eh?
Yes. Well, I mean, in the first book, it was more defined through the alien abduction syndrome and the kinds of things that happen, which is pretty, you know, missing time, seeing UFOs, having visitations with otherworldly beings, sometimes interdimensional in the bedroom at night, being taken to a place and medically examined, waking up with marks on your body, being taken, like say, with a group of people and having a group, quote, abduction or experience where you meet, let's say, a targeted partner on the craft or in something that really feels more like a lucid dream. Sometimes all they remember is a type of dream, but that was very vivid, where they knew something happened and there were these beings that were like aliens, but they weren't sure. Most of the time, people's memories are more shrouded with amnesia or perceptual overlay. And they usually remember it as a dream. So sometimes they think, oh, well, maybe this is astral. Maybe they just took me out of my body. But it doesn't matter, because when you interact in your energy body and in your astral body with another person, let's say you do bond and you basically meld, it's a soul binding. I mean, you know it. It's very, very powerful, and sometimes even more powerful than physically having sex with somebody, because you have a deeper connection energetically. So you'll have that sense, okay, let's say you have precognitive dreams of this particular person, and then you meet them, and it sets off all these paranormal things and instant, you know, empathy, telepathy, love at first sight, you know, feeling like you're in a magical reality where there's beings watching you, feeling like you're in some kind of drama myth. You know, you may have implants or marks on your body if there's like a real physical abductions taking place. You'll know. I mean, you'll get a sense of that. But more often than not, people don't remember. They may just have, oh, I woke up with these marks. How did I get this? And, you know, and sometimes after an event, like in my first book, I describe a case where a man was dating a woman, and I don't think she was an abductee. She was just a girlfriend, but the aliens basically came and scared her off and told her not to see him anymore. They were controlling his relationships, saying that, well, she wasn't one of us, and, you know, you're one of us, and they wanted to choose the partner they wanted for this particular abductee. And then, so basically they came in the middle of the night and they scared the shit out of this woman, but she was still like in a trance-like state, and they did something, you know, like poking her with some object and just scaring the crap out of her so that the next morning when she awoke, she might have seen marks on her body, but no memory, but extreme shift in attitude the next morning with no explanation, just shift, and she broke up with him. So these kinds of things happen where it makes you wonder, you know, what's really happening. Most people don't remember. Well, they have a sudden shift in behavior. So this whole switching off thing, that's part of the, quote, love bite thing where, let's say you're linked in with somebody, everything's like wonderful, and all of a sudden they just switch off as if for no reason, and they get really triggered, and you're like, what the hell happened? And sometimes it was an abduction that preceded this switching off or this emotional unplugging that takes place where you're just suddenly unlinked from them and then pining away in unrequited love. That's one of the symptoms. You know, a lot of the paranormal things happen or escalate during the drama of that connection. And of course, if the person has had alien abductions, that could signal that there's some kind of interference. So, and the energy vampirism dynamic, which I talked about in The Dark Side of Cupid, I tried to make it more simplistic so that one would recognize those red flags and, you know, the paranormal, supernatural, magical kinds of things, which in and of themselves aren't necessarily bad, but if it was combined with, let's say, the emotional highs, crashing lows, and the sense of being led around like a puppet on some crazy drama roller coaster that you don't have any control over, could signify there's interference. And then the third thing was like the psychopathology and emotional manipulation, let's say, by the targeted partner who's really completely run by these entities or partially possessed or hosted. And then that would be like the psychopathology element of, you know, this person's literally like gaslighting you, like there's something working through them that's really, really creepy and weird. And sometimes if you're clairvoyant, you could actually see the entity overshadowing them, and it may be temporary. It can come over them temporarily, and you see this like dark, shadowy thing kind of overcome their face and their eyes, and they change behaviors. Or they'll do funny things, and then they won't remember what they did, because during the time that they're temporarily taken over, they won't have a memory. Sometimes they don't have a memory of what they just did. So those kind of things are definite. Something's going on. So
the don't have the memory of. That reminds me of Twin Peaks. Do you remember, did you see Twin Peaks?
Was that a TV show?
It was a TV series.
I don't think I ever watched it, but I remember hearing about it.
All right, but it was basically, the theme is possession. And
really?
Yeah. There was the man, he was possessed by an entity which caused him to abuse his daughter.
Oh, no.
This entity was called Bob, and came from a spirit that they found in the Ghostwood Forest.
Wow.
And it was connected with aliens and stuff. Yeah, it was an amazing show. But anyway, the thing is that the next day, having killed his daughter, he walks smiling and dancing into the hotel.
Wow.
Knowing, you know, he lost his daughter, he killed her, and so there's this incredible conflict going on with him that sends him basically out of his body in bananas. He starts singing and dancing and tap dancing, and he's like, his father's, you know, his daughter's the homecoming queen, and she's been murdered in a brutal way by him being possessed by Bob.
Yeah.
And, you know, and here's the thing. We've been made to blame each other.
Yes.
Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, you know,
with compassion from your divine feminine perspective, because this is the, you know, this is the relationship problem, isn't it?
Yes, you know, and it's a vast issue in terms of what happens when there really is interference, and we don't really want to blame the partner because sometimes they don't know, and we don't even understand the depth of what we're really dealing with in this reality. Although we don't want to not take responsibility for certain behaviors or addictions, for example, or behaviors that are mean, like abusive behaviors, that's something that people do need to take responsibility, you know, but I think that there's a lot of things that happen that we just not aware of, and you really don't know until it happens to you enough to take a look at it. So I did talk about that in The Dark Side of Cupid, where, you know, it doesn't work to blame the other partner because that just brings more, you know, criticism and blame and shame, and it, you know, just creates more dissension. So I suggested, you know, compassionate communication, and did some, you know, dialogue, sample communication dialogues of how to present concerns, basically observations, feelings, needs, and requests, which is really based on what I call compassionate communication, which is Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication skills. And then actually using that for communication, which means learning how to communicate according to basically a rule of speaking from the heart in a certain way, such that you always address your feelings, and then you recognize the needs, basic human needs that are always beneath some kind of feeling that may or may not have been met in a particular situation that, let's say, they observed in their partner or an event that happened. And then perhaps after communicating that in a way where they can speak from the heart in a non-blaming way, that hopefully the person's receptive, then they could maybe make a request of, you know, would you be willing to maybe do something different, or just make a request. So I put that in there as sample communication dialogue as one way to deal with that. Although ultimately, you know, both partners, it's their responsibility to do their own individual healing and clearing work based on their willingness to do what's best for basically the sacred love of the relationship to maintain that. So that really is based on the desire and the intention of the individual. So if somebody's in denial and they're still in a lot of PTSD, let's say, they're more likely to engage in addictions and compulsive behaviors and triggering that is harmful to a relationship. So it's really important for people to get the healing and support they need if they have gone through some kind of trauma or continuous trauma in their life. So the real important thing is addressing human needs. Like in this society, we're shamed that we even have these things. They try to label it some mental illness or something's wrong with you, and they blame and they shame you. And a lot of the New Age ideologies will do that. They say, well, you know, the law of attraction, like attracts like, you created your reality. And so they just blame you, you know, for all these things happening. Like if you're sexually abused at 3 years old, you don't go and tell a kid that it's their fault because they have bad karma. Okay. You can't heal someone. Someone can't heal in the presence of feeling like they're blamed or shamed at all. So you have to really come from a place of true compassion where you actually allow that environment to embrace them in such a way they can even dig down deeper to release what's present, because it's usually very painful. So really engaging in the human need of compassion and support and connection and community based on truth, and really communication of truth and expression of truth from the heart in a non-blaming way. And that's actually a skill to learn, because many of us have been programmed to avoid what our true feelings are, or only stay in the mind and the head and out of the heart and out of the body. And in a patriarchal society that values the left brain and the rational and the scientific and the male ways of viewing and perceiving the world in terms of what's valuable is basically dominant as even a program, even in a collective unconscious way. So we're basically rigged. We're basically rigged from the start based on the patriarchal programming that's been done by the false gods, mind you. Okay? It's rigged us to basically stay in this left brain, rational, avoid your heart, avoid your spirit, you know, control the divine feminine, so the true wisdom and power can't even be present for healing to take place. So we're really trying to shift this dynamic by allowing this presence of compassion to be dominant, so that a true heart-to-heart connection and sacred connection and community can even happen. So that's what really needs to happen, and it's sacred community and connection really needs to happen in a big way.
Sacred community, and that is a very interesting thing, because you know, it's all very well having a bunch of people that can live together. That's great.
Or discuss something.
How cool are you? But what if you had, maybe not every week, you know, maybe once a month, you had a guest for a week.
Oh.
You know, a bunch of empaths have a guest that would come to learn and to study and, you know, to heal.
Yeah, he does.
And each of the members of the community has a different chakra because they're different ray. And
yeah.
That would be a very interesting thing. Yeah, sorry, I digress. Go ahead, but that would be one thing to heal things, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some indigenous communities where it's more tribal, they allowed for that. And in our Western society, even like raising a child, it's difficult because a lot of times we're stranded from our families or they live maybe on the other side of the country, and let's say the husband is working long hours and the woman's at home, and then maybe she's working too, but she doesn't have enough support in raising the child in a community fashion that makes rearing children and having family and community available. It's much more isolating, even though you wouldn't think so, but it is. It's more isolating these days. We really need to be more connected, you know, with respect to kids and sharing parenthood. Parenthood is very, very hard. And I think that more parents need help in terms of support with, you know, family. It's very difficult. I don't know if it's that way in your country, but in the U.S., we're really isolated.
Oh, yeah. And, I live in a place, I live near a place you might have heard of called Findhorn. Have you heard of Findhorn?
Yeah, I heard of that.
Essentially, we're a bunch of hippies up here, you know, really. We're all hippies. Well, not really hippies. I mean, most of these hippies, they're all like toffs, you know. But anyway, long story. It has drawn a community of people who are looking towards a better way of being.
Yes.
And what you're talking about, the NVC, the nonviolent communication. Let's just talk about that for a little while, because
it is
amazing. Really, that it's like, how can I speak to somebody, expressing my feelings to them, without manipulating the situation and by making them guilty or making them shamed? They're like blunt instruments. I always felt, you know, when my mother used to do it. Yeah, my mum was Jewish. My dad was Catholic, right? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So
what a combination.
Yeah. Right. Imagine. And so, I hated it. I really felt it, because it was like, I felt like she was hitting me with a club.
Wow.
When she could have just pointed in that direction. I'm really sensitive. I get it. I feel, you know, okay, all right, but you don't need to force me in such a heavy duty way. That's how I've always felt about manipulation. I'm so attuned to nuance that you don't need to manipulate me.
Yeah,
I'm very happy to go along with your ideas, but you don't need to manipulate me, and you certainly don't need to lock me down.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the whole communication thing, I mean, what I see is that in families where there's some kind of hidden abuse or an addiction like alcoholism or a hidden trauma, where the traumas were never healed, they got married, they had kids, and because of their hidden traumas, as well as addictions on top of it and compulsive behaviors to avoid the feelings associated with the traumas, that means they're not going to be able to come from their heart as easily. They're going to engage more in compulsive behaviors and always like these avoidance compulsive ways, or like staying in their head, for example, or only being in your heart when they go into a rage or something. So it's really about healing traumas and basically having that support system available to people so that they're not continuously traumatized, and then they have a healing environment where it's okay to basically be who you are and express yourself honestly without worried for being tortured and killed. I mean, some people live in an environment like in combat or in alcoholic abusive homes. If you express your feelings or your genuine nature, you can get tortured and killed for it. And this is severe. So people grow up like not talking about their feelings, because God forbid they can get killed for it. I mean, that's bad when you think about what happens in combat and in war and how they're training all these people, and then, you know, these abductees, for example, and people who've gone through these experiences, and then they ridicule them, or they can't really speak the truth, and even with their partners, a lot of them have been married, and then they don't wake up till, let's say, their mid-30s or 40s sometimes, and then they're married to a partner who basically serves to maintain the denial, and then they end up in a really unsafe relationship. So in the book, I talked about that. We must establish a nest and communication or a relationship of safety so that healing can even happen. And so that's one of the biggest problems with, let's say, MILABs, for example, is that they're in a constant situation of not being safe and under, you know, threat of survival and being out on the streets or being beat up or being tortured or being harassed or being targeted. So it's like you talk about the safety issue, it's hard to even establish that so that healing can even take place. And this is happening in the world larger scale as well, where our safety is being compromised, our survival, and so it's really hard. We're battling against some pretty nefarious forces that are basically trying to prevent us from our natural need to be human and good. Really, you know?
I totally know, and this is one of the things that I'm doing. You know, like I mentioned before, the 432 hertz on the jingles that I've just created, that's consciously applied to bring people back into their organic self, because the 432 is like organic music. It's Pythagorean. It's harmonic to our cells, you know, to our atoms. It's geometric, as opposed to the 440, which is, let's say, okay. So in the last few minutes, right? There's the unseen force, the hidden force that lays underneath what's been going on. They did. Where's the drum roll? They did a deal with the Aldebaranians in the 30s. They created the time travel in the late 30s. They were the Nazis. So, because how much involved with the Nazis are the alien love bite issues? And are Nazis, who are, you know, underground in Argentina and in the NSA, and hi guys, and we see you, and in Antarctica and South Africa and under Norway, and we know where you all are, and you know, it's time to come out and just like just be cool, you know, what's the point? They're just abundance of stored up hatred and loathing. You know.
They've been entrapped themselves when you think about it, that their races have been entrapped, and they may have been entrapped for generations in a controlled bloodline. And I mean, a lot of the scientists who work for some of these, you know, what do you call it, breakaway civilizations and MILAB programs, I mean, a lot of them are, you know, they're forced, and if they tell what they're doing, you know, they'll get killed or they'll lose their family. And so a lot of them probably would prefer not to do what they're doing unless they've been completely taken over. And then they no longer care, and they don't even know. But I think a lot of them are under threats to not say or do. I mean, we learn this from MILABs, right? When they come out and they finally tell their story, they don't tell it for a long time because they're truly afraid, and they are being threatened with their life or with their families, you know, if they tell the truth. So there's a lot of people who are in entrapped scenarios, let's put it that way, that have been based on these bargains that have been made, you know, years before. So that's what I think is happening. I think that people, if they had their choice, they really wouldn't be doing this. If they really realized the true ramifications of, let's say, making a soul contract with these beings, and if they really knew and they were really in connection with their spirit fully, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't make that choice unless they came here to help others and experience this so that they can have empathy to actually help others become free, you know, and maybe these things are happening too. You know, people are sent here and special forces operations on a spiritual level to help undo some of the damage.
I think you're right there. I was having a conversation with Andrew Bartzis the other night about precisely this, is that in order for souls to arrive on the earth, they have to basically go through the families of the entities that are the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. That's the only way in. So, and they often get caught in that, you know, in that terrible trauma of it all.
Yeah, there's some kind of agreement of entrapment just to get incarnated here, where it's like, you know, the devil's in the details, so to speak. And I really think that karma is rigged, although there are rules to the game. In order for us, I think if we understood the rules of the game more clearly and we had that knowledge, we could probably get out of a lot of this. Yeah. It's being kept hidden from us.
Well, we actually, like I said, we're about solutions. Andrew gave it to us the other day, and I've done one to release the divine masculine, and Colleen Kelly has done one to release the divine feminine. They're available for download at the Wolf Spirit Radio website. And the revocation of all contracts.
Yeah, I saw that on his website.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. We've done it for you. It's like if you listen to it, you're taking part in the ceremony.
Hmm.
Basically, so there's a point where you say I, and you can even say your name aloud. If you play it often enough, you can you can voice it along with you. With me or Colleen, and again, that's got the 432 hertz organic frequency. It's the frequency of the sarcophagus of the Great Pyramid. It's the frequency of the scarab beetle. It's this note here.
The hue.
Yeah.
Scott Lepper talks about that. He's a contactee. Talks about that. You've had him on your show.
Scott who?
His name is Scott Lemriel, and he claims to have a contact with positive ETs named the Ceres. And he talks about how using this mantra tone, or the hue, which you did, or the hume, which is actually very ancient. Some of the Buddhists have been doing this for many years, as well as Taoist healing sounds. But it's supposed to connect you more with the highest realm above the void somehow, and then help disintegrate some of the negative resonating technologies from alien implants and that kind of thing.
That's right. It's the organic fractal.
Yeah.
You see, because that note is related to the fractal of the natural frequencies, and the Fibonacci sequence has a connection in with it. It's very organic, and when you tune your guitar down, Hendrix used to do it, Bob Marley has it, and you know all these amazing tunes, like what's that one, the Bob Marley tune that everybody loves, Three Little Birds. There's a Beatles song in it, stuff like that. Evie Lorgan, thank you so much. I'd love to have you back if you ever want to come on and have a chat about stuff. There's, you know, we've got a big library here, and you could regard me as a sort of super soldier librarian, because there's some stuff about stuff. It's
That show with Andrew Barches sounded good. Maybe find that on the archive somewhere.
Yeah.
With the tone you talked about and the breaking the contracts, I think that would be great to have as a resource for people, because that's real important, like breaking the contracts and agreements and expressing the divine feminine masculine. That's good.
It's very, very beautiful. I recommend it to everybody. So as I said, you know, just listening to it, it's like, you know, watching the Grammys. Makes you part of a satanic ritual, folks. You know? So, if you listen to a holy ceremony, you know, like this revocation, which is, you know, it's a statement of your intent. If you can say it along with it, that's great. But even if you just stand by it and tune in with it, then you're doing the same thing. And because it's about intent, it's not really about words. It's about understanding and knowledge and intent. Evie, I've had some wonderful feeling moments today, speaking with you and listening to you. I can feel you're speaking from the heart, and it's been lovely. I'm almost overwhelmed.
Really, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, have a good evening then.
Thank you very much. Once again, it's Eve Lorgan. Can you spell that? Can you spell it out, please?
E-E-L-O-R-G-E-N, or evelorgan.com is my website. I also have a Facebook page for Eve Lorgan and Evie Lorgan. It's actually both the same. So, if you want to contact me from there, I can be available, and my books as well. So I do sessions with people as well. That's one of the things that I do too. So,
well, obviously, you know, certainly I'd recommend your own personal contact. I'm sure everybody, the audience is we're all very empathic here. In fact, in the next show, the Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank show, we take we join empathy, we join compassion, and we go around and heal things and people.
Oh, nice.
So it's just awesome. And we've been healing crystal implants recently.
Oh, good.
That's been exciting stuff. So, Evie, do come back. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you very
much.
This
has,
bless your heart. This has been Ever Beyond. Thank you very much.